Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you for listening tonight. We had a good number this morning, although we were missing some regulars. But we're thankful to have you listening this evening. It was great to see Don and Twyla back after being away because of COVID-19. It's great to see them again face to face. We want to thank Brent for another good lesson on Acts this morning. The story of the conversion of Saul is always a great story to read and to study together. He's doing a great job in the lessons on Acts. If you've missed any of the lessons, don't forget you can go to the website. They are all there. I believe they are all there. We have missed a recording or two of different lessons at times over the months, but most, if not all of them, are there. Go back and catch up on any that you have missed. Tonight I'd like to go back and look at the book of Proverbs chapter 6 again and continue a message that we started last week. We got part of the lesson done and we want to finish up tonight. So let's again read from Proverbs 6 verses 16 through 19. There are six things which the Lord hates, yea, seven that are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and the one who spreads strife among brothers. Quite a list, isn't it? Last time we talked about pride, the haughty eyes, the lying tongue, and the shedding of innocent blood, that is murder. And so tonight we'll talk about the last four: making wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to do evil, false witnesses against another, and those who spread strife among brothers. Again, as I did last week, I'm not going to define these things much. They don't need much definition. They're pretty obvious, the meaning of what these things are. But I want to look through scriptures and give some examples of each of these for the purpose of trying to, in our minds, drive home just how despicable and horrible each one of these things are. God hates sin. Every disobedience, every rebellion is hated by him. But he lists seven things here specifically that we can learn from, that we need to learn from, and apply them and use them in our lives that we may stay away from these things that God hates so much. The fourth of the seven is the heart that devises wicked plans. There are some folks that just love doing evil. They weren't born that way. They did not inherit a corrupt nature from Adam or from their parents. But over the years, their hearts have become more and more corrupt, and all they think about is sin. Paul talks about people like that in Ephesians chapter 2, the first three verses. And he says, "And you he did make alive when you were dead through your trespasses and sins, wherein you once walked, according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the powers of the air, of the spirit that now worketh in the sons of disobedience, among whom we also all once lived in the lusts of our flesh, doing the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest." Paul says, "You he did make alive." He made us alive when we were dead in trespasses and sins. He talks about the fact that they had walked according to the course of this world. They had lived according to the dictates of the prince of the power of the air, that's Satan, of the spirit that now works in the sons of disobedience. Individuals who lived their lives and desire to be in a disobedient state. They're rebellious. He says they lived in the lust of their flesh, doing the desires of the flesh and of the mind. They lived according to what they wanted to. It used to be said way back when we were younger, if it feels good, do it. And that's the way they lived. According to the lust, according to the flesh, according to the desires of the flesh and mind. And he said they were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest. Children of wrath were by nature children. That means, just simply means, children deserving of wrath. even as the rest. And by nature doesn't mean they were just naturally that way. This word nature means that which by practice has become, we would say, second nature. They didn't have to think about it. It was just natural. They had what we sometimes say the muscle memory. It just came natural to them to do sin and iniquitous things. And so there were a number of individuals in the Bible who devised wicked plans, not because they were born that way, but because that's the choices that they made. We think of Delilah and the Philistines who devised wicked plans, planning together to find the secret to Samson's strength so that he could be bound and killed. In the New Testament, we see a group of Jews, 40 men in Acts chapter 23, who hated Paul so much. The Jews hated Paul so much. Over and over again, they were doing everything they could to trap him and destroy him. And these 40 men took a vow not to eat until they had killed Paul. I wonder how that worked out. Well, they were not successful. I guess they either gave up their vow or some of them didn't make it. In the Old Testament, Haman devised a wicked plan, devised a plan to entrap Mordecai and exterminate the Jews. Because of his hatred for one man, he set on a plot to kill a whole race of people there in the book of Esther. Again, he was not successful. But the one I want to spend a little bit more time on as we finish this point is the wicked planner and plotter Herodias, the wife of Herod. Herodias had set herself against John the Baptist because he had the audacity to tell Herod that he didn't have a right to be married to her. In Mark chapter 6, verses 17 through 19, it says, "For Herod himself hath sent forth and laid hold of John and bound him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, for he had married her. For John said to Herod, It is not lawful for thee to have thy brother's wife. And Herodias set herself against him and desired to kill him, and she could not." And so the passage goes on about how that came about. But it says that Herod had laid hold of John and had bound him for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. She stated as being his brother Philip's wife. He had married her, but she didn't belong to him. That's interesting. We need to learn that lesson. You may be married to someone, but that didn't mean you really belong to them in God's eyes. Verse 18 says, "For John said unto Herod, It's not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. And she hated him so much, she desired to kill him, she plotted to kill him, but Herod still had a little bit of a soft spot in his heart for John and didn't want to put him to death. But her opportunity came. Oh, the hate that was within her heart. Her daughter danced. You remember the story. Her daughter danced before Herod and his friends, and they were so pleased. Herod was so pleased. He promised her anything up to half the kingdom. And she said, Mama, what should I ask for? And Mama said, The head of John the Baptist. And so she went before the king, and she said, I will that thou forthwith give me on a platter the head of John the Baptist. Mark chapter 6, verse 25. Hearts that devise wicked plans. The second one tonight is the feet that are swift to run to mischief. When we say feet that are swift to run to mischief, we're not necessarily talking about the physical act of running, although that could be the case, and we're going to see one in a moment. But we're talking about one who is eager. Those who have swift feet to run to mischief, it's just simply saying those who are eager to do evil. And again, there's a number of examples. In the Old Testament, we do have in the story of Elisha and Gehazi, his servant, and the story of Naaman in 2 Kings chapter 5, how Elisha had healed Naaman of his leprosy. And of course, Naaman was so pleased, he offered him a reward. He wanted to give him something. Elisha turned him down, and Naaman headed home. But Gehazi literally ran after him and told him a lie, told him a story saying, You offered something to my master, and he turned you down, but some young sons of the prophets have come, and they need a little bit of something." And Naaman was happy to give it, and Elisha took it, of course, not for any sons of prophets, but for himself, and hid it in his tent. But Elisha knew, and the leprosy that had been upon Naaman now was put upon Gehazi. In the New Testament, we see how that the Jews spread trouble against Paul everywhere he went. They were anxious to do him evil, desirous of doing him evil. But the last illustration under this point I want to talk about is Queen Athaliah and her bloody reign in 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. Her story is found in 2 Kings chapter 8, parts of chapter 8, and parts of chapter 11 in 2 Kings. And 2 Chronicles chapters 22 and 23 has a little bit more complete story in that place. But Athaliah was the only woman who ever reigned over Judah in the southern kingdom, the southern nation. She was the wife of Jehoram, king of Judah, but more importantly, to get the context and to understand her evil breeding, she was the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel of Israel. She had married Jehoram, the king's son in Judah, and so an intermarriage between the throne in the north and the throne in the south. Later, after the death of her son, Ahaziah, she reigned herself for 6 years. And in an attempt to consolidate her power, she attempted to kill all the royal seed, all of his children. Well, his children would have been her grandchildren. Imagine that. A person who is so hungry for power and control that they're willing to kill the royal seed, those who should inherit the throne, kill them so she can keep the throne. But Joash was set aside and saved by Jehosheba, the sister of Ahaziah, took the child, saved the child, hid the child, kept the child safe, until a few years later when godly people came along and took the child and put him on the throne and did away with Athaliah. Now that's evil planning. That's evil planning. Planning that even involves the killing of one's own grandchildren in order to keep their power. Swift to run to mischief. Well, we see the next of the list there in Proverbs is false witnesses that utter lies. What a horrible thing to be a false witness. In our class this morning in the book of Proverbs, we talked about the dangers of the tongue. The Bible is filled with warnings about the sins of the tongue. God hates lying. God hates false witnesses. Think about a person in our court system who lies intentionally to get someone convicted that they want to see convicted. How unfair that is, how ungodly that is. And so we see that that has happened in history, and it certainly happened in the Old and New Testament. In the New Testament, we see the example of Stephen. Stephen in Acts chapter 6 and 7. Stephen was one of the seven who had been chosen to take care of the widows who were in need. And there in Acts 6, he debated with the Jews in the synagogues in Jerusalem. He preached Christ. And verse 10 of that chapter says that the Jews were not able to withstand the wisdom and the spirit by which he spoke. And so verse 11 says, "They secretly persuaded some men to say that we have heard Stephen speak words of blasphemy against Moses and against God. He had not done so. He had not done anything wrong except just defend his understanding and his beliefs about Moses and the law. But they spoke lies about him, and in a kangaroo court was convicted, just as our Lord had been among the Jews who hated him and now hate his disciples, and he was stoned to death." We could also think about the witnesses against Jesus. Same thing there. The Jews were good at rounding up false witnesses, weren't they? They had done so against Jesus. In Matthew 26, verse 59, the Jews sought false witnesses against him They sought, they were intentionally, as they had done with Stephen, they did earlier with Jesus. They sought false witnesses against him to get him to be put to death. They didn't do a very good job of that. They couldn't even get witnesses that agreed with each other. Finally, if they found two that said, I will destroy the temple and in 3 days I will build it up. There was nothing about that that was really against the law. It may have been a brag. It may have been a boast that was outlandish. But was it really against the law? Well, it was not. But that didn't matter to them. They were seeking to find anything, to hold on to anything in order to condemn him and take him to Pilate. Well, but in the story of the Old Testament, we see false witnesses. The story of Naboth's vineyard in 1 Kings chapter 21. Again, a story of false witnesses. This story involved the wicked Ahab and Jezebel that we mentioned earlier. A man by the name of Naboth had a vineyard. Ahab wanted it. His vineyard was right up next against Ahab's property. But Naboth wouldn't sell it. He said it was his family's inheritance. It was their land. And he could not sell it. And Ahab was unhappy about that. And Ahab pouted. And he went into his bedroom and he flopped on his bed and he faced against the wall and pouted. And Jezebel came in and asked him what was going on and what the problem was. And she said she'd take care of it. And she did. She wrote letters in the king's name to the officials of that city, basically telling them to frame Naboth, to proclaim a fast and set Naboth in front of the people, then have false witnesses come and say he cursed God and the king. They did. Naboth was killed, and Ahab took possession of the field. Finally, let's talk about he that sows discord among the brethren. A number of illustrations could be given to those who sow discord. Think about Absalom. Absalom, again, plotting against his own father, David. Absalom going to the gates of the city where the influential and wise men would sit and to talk about different things, where decisions would be made. Absalom going to the gates of the city and sweet-talking the men, trying to influence the nation, trying to steal his father's kingdom, to the point that he did lead a rebellion and David had to leave the city for a while. But in God's providence, David was victorious over his own son and took the kingdom again. But Absalom coming and sowing discord in his father's kingdom. The Judaizers in the New Testament, a New Testament example of the Judaizers who came into the church in the first century, seeking to sow discord among God's people. Paul and others, the apostles, had gone and they had preached the gospel. Paul went throughout Galatia preaching the gospel, and then on to other parts of Greece, we would call Greece, Achaia and Macedonia, and those areas, on into what would be now Europe, as the gospel was preached. And yet the false teachers, following him from place to place, seeking to sow discord among God's people. Paul writes the book of Galatians specifically for that purpose, to talk about this false teaching. They had thought about it, they had discussed it, they had debated it in Acts chapter 15, because some from the Pharisees, former Pharisees that were now Christians, some of the sect of the Pharisees said that you must be circumcised after the custom of Moses or you cannot be saved. And so this false teaching was making its way into the church. They were sowing discord among God's people. They were wanting to force the Gentiles to be circumcised and keep the law. And Paul wouldn't stand for it, and Paul opposed it from place to place. But we see discord being sown for personal reasons, for power reasons, for influence reasons. In the Old Testament, in Numbers chapter 6, we see the rebellion of Korah. We see rebellion over and over again, rebellion of God's people, rebellion against God's constituted authority, whether the old or the new. And we have to be so careful about it. Korah rebelled. Korah and his people rebelled against Moses. In Numbers 16, we see the rebellion of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. In Numbers 16, verse 3, Korah says, "You have gone far enough, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. So why do you exalt yourself above the assembly of the Lord?" He's talking to Moses. He's saying, all the nation is holy, all the congregation is holy, every one of them. The Lord is in our midst, so why do you exalt, you, Moses, why do you think you're so important? Why have you exalted yourself? Who made you the big cheese? Well, God had. God had spoken through Moses. God had made Moses their leader. And now these fools in their self-righteousness saying, who died and made you king? Well, God had. Not made him king, but you understand my point. God had made him to be the leader over the people. God had given the law in Sinai through Moses. God had made him the leader of the people during the time they were in the wilderness. And now these rebels said, you've gone too far, Moses. You've assumed this yourself. He hadn't assumed it himself. God had given him that authority. Moses says, in the morning, God will show you who's holy. Moses hadn't gone too far. He had not overstepped his authority. And the next day, these men came, and God opened up the ground and swallowed up the rebels. God hates those who rebel against established authority. We must be careful in our lives. It may not be this dramatic a situation, but we must be careful never, never, never to rebel against God's established authority, His New Testament church. The Lord has established His church according to the pattern that's given to us in the New Testament. That pattern was revealed to us by the Holy Spirit through the holy apostles and prophets of the New Covenant. It's written down for us in the New Testament, and every part of that pattern is important. Every part of that pattern must be followed, and every part of that pattern is something that we need to be dedicated to. It's not up to us to change even one iota, anything that God said within His Word and revealed to us within the Scriptures. It is our responsibility to follow that pattern, to worship God in spirit and in truth as He has ordained, to establish His church with elders and deacons as He has ordained, to preach the gospel and edify the saints and build up the body of Christ, take the gospel to the lost in the way that He has ordained, not in the way that man thinks that he knows better than. Following established authority. Here were rebels. They were sowing discord among brethren. There can be discord among brethren today because some want to rebel and some want to follow a pattern that is not found in the New Testament. When they do that, we must be like Moses and say, no, I haven't gone too far. I'm simply following God's pattern and God's plan. We don't want there to be discord, but we must follow God's pattern and plan. Let us be careful. We are not like Korah and Abiram, Dathan and Abiram, and rebel against God's constituted authority. There are six things which the Lord hates, yea, seven abomination to Him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers. God hates sin. God hates pride. God hates the lying tongue. God hates rebellion. And so let us be careful that we are never guilty. Thank you for listening tonight. God bless and be with you all. I love you all. Take care of yourselves. Have a great week, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.